Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the last day of TechEd. I hope that you have had a great time listening to all the sessions and have learned a good deal during this week. I also hope that you have been able to go and visit New Orleans and the nice things that this city, this great city has. I want to say that I am really, really excited of being here in TechEd. Being able to share with you guys the latest things that we have been working on during the last year that I'm confident that will be very valuable to you guys, to your customers, and to your deployments. I am Jairo Cadena. I am a program manager in the Active Directory team, and I'm in the a product group where we are working on all these nice features and solutions around enabling work from anywhere. What we are going to talk today is basically what is it that you need to think about when you are deploying solutions for enabling work for external access or from anywhere, you know, employees working from home, from Starbucks, or from any place while traveling, or even when they are on premises and they are bringing all their personal devices to access corporate resources. In this session, I will also talk about some of the enhancements that we have made into the VPN solutions in Windows Server. So probably you have seen this slide already. By show of hands, how many of you have attended related sessions to enabling work from anywhere, like yesterday's Udai session or Samuel session at 5 p.m. as well? So some of you, okay. Well, basically, what I want to highlight of this slide is that when companies are thinking of solutions to enable work from anywhere, they can think of three types of solutions. One is the typical, you know, VPN solution where devices connect directly to the corporate network and have access to a wide range of resources that are sitting on premises. Here also we have the direct access technology that works for domain join machines, Active Directory domain join machines. And the particularity of this, as I said, is that the device will have direct line of sight to a wide range of resources on premises. Then we have solutions like RDS, where basically companies would like to achieve isolation of data that basically don't want data coming to the device by virtualizing applications or virtualizing desktops. And then we have the reverse proxy solution in which the company would selectively publish specific web resources that are sitting on premises for external access. So just to have a quick idea on where we are here, how many of you deploy reverse proxies? Okay, so that's a great deal of people. Now, the reasoning behind choosing what technology or what solution or a combination of them basically relies on security considerations and maybe user experience considerations as well. So for instance, if you are going to deploy RDS, even though you don't have any data on the device, depending on what device you are using, the user experience may not be the ideal one. In a similar way, if you are using VPN technologies, then you have a great deal of access because the device will have access to a wide range of resources. But maybe this is something that you are not comfortable with now that more and more devices are coming into the enterprise. So what we are going to focus on this session is a reverse proxy solution that we are introducing in Windows Server 2012 R2, which is called the Web Application Proxy. So what is the Web Application Proxy? Well, I can tell you two things that it is that probably can give you an idea, and maybe two things that it does. So one is that it is a new service. It's a service that is part of Windows Server remote access role. Therefore, you know, as a service in Windows Server, then it has the benefits of the tools and the consistency with other server roles. Like, you can manage it using Server Manager, for example, which means that you would have BPA rules. You can see services, performance counters, and so on as any other role. Also, how many of you are familiar with the Remote Access Management Console? So probably half of the room. So as you know, that console is used to manage VPN and direct access solutions. Now, the web application proxy being a service and the remote access role is also using the remote access management console for that matter. Now, you will be able to monitor, for example, servers in a cluster, servers that you have deployed for the web application proxy on this console. You are going to be able to configure the service in this console as well. So basically, the idea is that you would have just one single console to manage your remote access solutions. Now, the web application proxy, it's a reverse application proxy, of course, but it is also an ADFS proxy. So I think I know the answer for this, but how many of you probably have used UAG? And how many of these hands have used UAG with ADFS? Okay, so actually almost all of you guys that raised your hands. So if you think about what you needed to do in UAG to integrate with ADFS, there were, you know, some number of steps and considerations that you needed to have. Now, with the web application proxy being an ADFS proxy, you don't need to think about that. It is basically one single component, and it's an extension or expansion of the ADFS proxy. So with that being a reverse proxy, of course, it has the benefits of traffic isolation, DOS protection, host translation, you know, but also it has all the listeners that ADFS listens to. It also supports, you know, client TLS authentication on behalf of the ADFS. And of course, it would support device authentication now that we have introduced the concept of workplace join in a Windows Server. How many of you know exactly what workplace join is? Just to know, okay, that's great. So actually, you guys have been paying attention to the previous sessions. That's great. Now, let's talk about two things that it does. The web application proxy pre-authenticates access to the apps, you know, similar to what UAG did, for example. And that means that that only authenticated traffic is allowed to become into the network. You know, it's part of the risk management attributes that comes with the product. Now, when we think about what that pre-authentication means, it is basically what the application in the backend requires to authenticate a user or a device, plus what the edge policies are. So now you will have, and I will get into that in a moment, you will have another application that represents the edge access. And you will be able to specify policies, you know, authentication policies, authorization policies that define the access to the network. Now, The other thing that it does is that it supports different types of application patterns. This means that browser applications, both Windows integrated or claims based, or modern apps. So now that we have these rich clients in many devices, in iOS, in Windows, then more and more RESTful type of modern services will become available, and then the web application proxy is able to pre-authenticate that traffic as well. And I will get into that in a minute. And of course, Office clients, and I'm talking here clients that implement the MSOFBA protocol. How many of you know what MSOFBA is? Okay, just probably a few of you. MSOFBA is just the authentication protocol that is used by Office clients like Word, you know, Excel, Project, Visio, and these clients. So anyway, now, if we think about the end-to-end for enabling work from anywhere, we need to think about three things. One, application publishing. How I, as an admin, can make available those resources outside for external access. Then I need to think about how I can secure those resources. What's my risk management strategy for that? And then, of course, there's the view of the user. What's the experience? Am I getting SSO or not? In which situations I do that? So let's go one by one. And then let's talk first about application publishing. So this is probably very typical of you. You have an internal network on one side, and then you have somewhere something in the middle that is called a DMZ or a perimeter network, and probably you have firewalls in between. And then you have your resources in the internal network, web applications, file servers, you know, SharePoint sites, et cetera, et cetera. And let's say that you have one specific line of business application that authenticates using Windows integrated authentication. Then, of course, you have in the internal network all your platform that supports those services. And, of course, one key component of that is Active Directory. So let's say that you have your ADFS backed by Active Directory behind, and then you have users with devices that want to have access to those resources inside. And then you have the perimeter network where you put all your servers that will bridge that access from the internet to the internal network. And here it is where the web application proxy fits. So the web application proxy is an ADFS proxy, right? As I said, and also it's a reverse application proxy. So when we think about the web application proxy being an ADFS proxy, we can think of a component that is an extension of ADFS. So it's one component of ADFS that is sitting at the edge of the network. But when we think about the web application proxy as a reverse proxy of an application, we can think that it is a component that is an extension of the application. This means that the web application proxy as an extension of the application will receive tokens issued by the ADFS for the application access. So that means that the web application proxy will have some representation in ADFS where I can specify policies. Now, let's say that that LOB application has some namespace. Let's say that is HTTP LOB. And then let's say that my namespace for the ADFS is sts.fabricam.com. Now, the web application proxy being an ADFS proxy, then of course it will be listening into that namespace as well. Now, let's have that scenario in mind, that environment in mind, and then let's go and jump to a demo, a quick demo in which I will go ahead and publish that LOB application, that integrated Windows Auth application for external access. So I will come to my AD, and then the first thing that I will do is, actually let me close this, in Server Manager, and probably I will do something like this. In Server Manager, I can come here to Tools and then launch ADFS Management. And one thing that we need to have in mind is that for an application to get a token from ADFS, that application needs to be known to ADFS. When we think of integrated Windows Auth applications that by default do not handle claims, at least from tokens from ADFS, then we need to go ahead and create that representation in ADFS. So the way we do that is ADFS has these trust relationships where all the different applications are defined, and this is what we call relying party trusts. Basically, an application becomes known to ADFS, and it becomes a relying party of ADFS. So how many of you are familiar with the ADFS concepts and ADFS console? Okay, quite some of you, probably half of the of you. And then something that we have introduced here, you will see here the add relying party trust wizard. That was already there from forever. But then we introduced this new concept, adding a non-claims aware relying party trust. And what it will do is just go and let me move this a little bit here. And it's a wizard that will just allow me to specify a specific name, for example, for the application. So this is my application name. And it requests that I specify a specific identifier. This is a URL or a URI. In this case, I'm calling it lob.fabricam.com/IWA, and I will add it. Then I do next. I want to specify any additional authentication. I will get to that in when we talk about risk management. And then that's pretty much it. When I do close, then I have my relying party trust created here. Now, when I go to my web application proxy, now I'm sitting in my perimeter network, or I'm connecting remotely to my web application proxy, I can go here to remote access. I will show you very quick. And then I can see my server, in this case, Fabricam WAP 01 is my server. And then I can go to Tools and launch Remote Access Management. So when I launch this, I will be able to configure and publish applications on the web application proxy. So if you see, then I can see the list of published web applications here. And I have an action here to publish. When I come to publish, the first thing that it will ask me is, what's the pre-authentication that is required for this published application? You see, I have two options. Do I want to be pre-authenticated or not? If it is, of course, it will handle that through ADFS. And if not, it's the concept that we call pass-through, which means there's no pre-authentication happening, and then I just want the web application proxy to act as a pure reverse proxy for this application. So when I choose ADFS, then I get the list of relying party trusts or relying parties that I have created, and here's the one that we have just created, LOBIWA app. So then the next step is to specify what are those external and internal properties that this application has. So I will specify a name, LOBIWA app external, for example, and then I will say I will publish this application under this specific name, fabricam.com/IWA. It will ask me for the SSL certificate. I will use my wildcard one. And then here you will see that I'm being asked for an SPN. So the way IWA applications are published and pre-authenticated through ADFS is by the web application proxy relying on Kerberos constraint delegation for the user that is trying to be accessed. For that, we need an SPN. So I will just specify one here and then publish. So now we see this application accessing, published here. Okay. So now let's move on, and I will show the access in a second. All right. So now we have our environment, and then what we have just done was, the first thing that we did was we went to ADFS, and we said that an application that requires pre-authentication needs to be known by ADFS. So the first thing that we did when we created that relying party trust was creating that representation of that application in ADFS. And then what was the next step we did? Then we went to the web application proxy and just published that application. So then now this endpoint that was not present before is now up and running for requests that are coming from the user. All right. So that was pretty simple. We just create that relying party or that representation of the application in ADFS for non-claims aware applications, and then we just publish that endpoint to the internet. Now, when we think about risk management, now we have published our application. Now we know that application is reachable for external access. Now we need to think about protecting it. So if we think we have our internal applications, and then we have some kind of policies that we define for that access. And of course, we define those in ADFS and are part of that relying party trust policies that I talked previously. So those policies can be defined based on, what the user is, what are the group memberships of that user, but also it can be defined based on the device. Is this a registered device or not? Is a workplace joint device or not? Am I okay allowing access for this application or for the edge for non-workplace joint devices? But also the location. I can define policies like am I okay allowing access from the intranet but not through the internet. Or I can say for external access, I will require multi-factor authentication, for example. Now, there's a relationship between the application and those policies, and that's basically the application policies that will be applied when access to that application is being made. And typically, that's a one-to-one relationship. So for, let's say, a SharePoint claims-aware application, you might have one relying party trust created in ADFS. But then now, up to this point, it was all existing in ADFS before, except for the device piece that we have introduced in Windows Server 2012 R2. And now a new concept was, okay, now we have this published application. It's a new entity that we need to think about. And of course, it has a relationship with a backend application. So we specified an external URL for a specific internal URL when we publish the application. But also, it will have a relationship with those policies. Now, let's take an example. And let's say that you have an LOB application that has been accessed by browsers like, IE or Safari. And then now you are modernizing that application, and you are adding RESTful services to that. Now, the application in itself is the same one. It probably has the same policies for access, but maybe you want to have a different type of client accessing that application. So you might have, for example, LOB for the browser clients, and maybe you have LOB / mobile or / modern or something like that for rich clients. So then what that will do is that the relationship that happens between those is that you might have one set of policies that define the access to that application, but you might want to publish two different applications in the web application proxy. And why is that? It is because the patterns of authentication that the web application proxy handles are different between those two. And specifically, I'm talking about pre-authentication. I will talk about those patterns in a minute. But the relationship between the published application and the policies becomes what we call the pre-authentication policies. They are not just the application in the back end, but they are also the ones that are defined for the edge, that representation of the web application proxy in ADFS. So now let me introduce another concept that is very important when you think about risk management. For workplace join, ADFS has basically a registration service. It's natively part of ADFS. When you install ADFS, that registration service is there. Now, the way clients can discover that registration service is through a specific DNS suffix. That is, think about this like a discovery endpoint that will tell the device what is the URL of the registration service. So the DRS, let's call it, so I don't need to talk a lot, device registration service, DRS. The DRS is also an application. So even though it's part of ADFS, it is also an application where you can define policies for access. So here is when you say, I don't want, when a device is being workplace joined, I require an additional factor of authentication, for example. Or I don't want this set of groups to even be able to workplace join the device. Or anything, things like that. You can just define rich policies as provided by ADFS. But then, as I was saying, to discover that there's a specific discovery endpoint, and that's called enterprise enrollment, that domain name, in this case, that fabricam.com. The ADFS, being an ADFS proxy, of course, listens into that namespace as well. So then, now, if we think about the process, the device will come to this endpoint to find out where the DRS endpoint is. So how many of you remember the workplace join experience where you go to Windows and then go to workplace join? Okay, some of you. So when you type your username on basically the UPN, what that client is doing in the back end is taking the domain name, adding the suffix of enterprise enrollment, sending a GET request, and then obtaining where the DRS endpoint is. So when the client goes there, and the ADFS proxy basically just forwards that to the ADFS, then the ADFS will return to the client where that endpoint is. Now, that endpoint, it happens to be on the same namespace of the ADFS. So when the user just goes ahead, and not the user, but the workplace join application is running, it will send a registration request, and I won't get into the details. If you're interested, come and see me afterwards. But then the ADFS will receive that, and what will happen is that a representation of that device will be created in Active Directory. So the same way as we have computer objects that represent domain join devices, now we will have device objects that represent these workplace join devices. And then when this succeeds, it will just go ahead and return that certificate that will be the identity that the device will present out in for the requests. Now, if you think about this process, this is a very sensitive process and sensible process. And then if you remember one of the concepts that Udai mentioned and the recommendations that he mentions in his presentation, our guidance is that this process requires additional authentication. You don't want any device coming just with username and password. So if we think about how we build up that security, on the foundation, of course, we have username and password. And then that might not be enough, right? So what we can do is basically require device workplace joined as a policy, and of course, requiring additional authentication when joining that device to the workplace. And maybe this is all what you need. Maybe this will meet your 90% or more of your security requirements. On top of that, you can specify per application. For example, if you have HBI type applications that you want to protect further, you can say, I do not only require device that is registered, but also an additional set of authentication. Could be a smart card, or could be phone factor, or could be any provider that you have for MFA. So let's go and let me show a demo where we can see where we can protect that particular workplace join operation. So if we come to AD here, and then I do this, then let me show you a couple of things. One is that when you come, you will see the device registration service, right? And that's a relying party, even though it's part of ADFS, it's a service of ADFS, it is also a relying party, as I said. It's also an application that in which you can define policies. So now, when you go to authentication policies, you can say, I want to specify authentication policies for device registration service, for example. And then you can say, I will require multi-factor authentication for this. So one could be, I can say, I will require MFA for unregistered devices, of course. But then the other point is that if you remember, the web application proxy, the edge in itself, it is also an application. So when we come here and we come to authentication policies, we see, okay, nothing to worry about. Just the remote desktop. But then you will see here web application proxy as a special application of the ADFS. And then, of course, you can say edit. And then you can say, I will require only, for example, MFA for unregistered devices. Or I will say MFA is required if access is being made through from the extranet. So for example, so if we say that MFA is required, that means that if I'm going to my client here, and then I look for workplace join, I can just type workplace, and then I will search very quick where that is. I will say here, connect to the workplace. I would say John Doe at fabricam.com. I will say join. And then here what you see is what we call the web authentication broker. Okay, what happened here? Sorry. So this is the web authentication broker. Who knows what the web authentication broker is? So just few of you. So this being a rich application, there are, you know, in Windows there are different brokers, a network broker or certificate access broker, things like that. I don't know the exact names, but the broker to have access to specific resources in the device. One is the web authentication broker, and what it does is it's like a Trident browser window available to rich applications that will allow authentication to, you know, to a server like ADFS. So in this case, I'm going to specify my credentials, and then that was just it, right? Now, if I do leave, and then I come to my ADFS, here, I can just go ahead and say I want to specify require multi-factor authentication from unregistered devices, which I could have done that as well from my web application proxy application, right? And then when I come to my client, and try again, John Doe at fabriccam.com, and I do join, then it tells me that a phone call will be made to your cell phone. So I do continue. So I'm receiving the call from Phone Factor.
Please press the pound sign to complete your authentication. You are successfully authenticated.
So I have just authenticated using my phone, and then I have just successfully workplace joined my device. So that's just an example on how you can just build up your security by requiring additional factors of authentication for workplace join. All right, so then let's move on. And then, so we have this, let's say that we have just set up all our policies, the policies for the edge access, for the device registration service, for my application internally. So then let's see what happens. And bear with me in because we are going step by step. I hope that 300 level for this is appropriate, more than I would expect. But in this case, when the device sends a request to the application, and the device is sitting outside, the web application proxy will receive that request. But then the web application proxy, I will just call it proxy from now on. The proxy will say, hey, you don't have a token, you don't have a cookie, you don't have anything that tells me that you have been authenticated before. So then the proxy will just say, you know what, go ahead and go to this ADFS, get me a token, and then we can talk. So the device will follow that redirection, and it will basically, what we call a sign-in request, the ADFS will say, oh, is this device, because the certificate is being placed and basically sent to ADFS. The application is sitting on premises. The device is coming from the out. The request is coming from the outside. The device is in the internet. How do I know that? It's because it crossed the proxy. So then I check the edge policies, the application policies, and this is what we call the combined policy. And we say, oh, for these two policies, we require username and password and maybe phone factor authentication. So what ADFS will do is send a challenge. It would be an HTML form that in our previous demo was rendered in the web authentication broker, if you remember. And then, you know, after probably a couple of dance legs there will be, for example, a phone factor call, and then the username will specify username and password, and the device will send that certificate. So when that comes to ADFS, ADFS will just authenticate those accounts against ADDS, to be more exact. And upon success, the ADFS will return a token, a proxy token, basically a token that is intended to be consumed only by the proxy, and then a cookie, a single sign-on cookie that will be used in future requests, so users will get single sign-on, and I will get that in a minute. Now, given that the device is a workplace join device, that cookie is persistent. So now the device, you can, you know, shut down the device, come up, close sessions, and all that, the user will still enjoy SSO. So the other point that I want to mention is that it sends that proxy token in the query string. And the reason why I'm saying that is because many, probably some of you can think, oh, like if it's in the query string, can that be just, so can a rogue man in the middle can take that proxy token and then use it? So I will get that in a second, why that won't be a problem. But when the device receives that token, it follows that redirect and sends it back with the initial request to the application with the proxy token in the query string and, of course, the device certificate. Again, every call to ADFS and every call to the web application proxy will carry that device, that identity of that device. So then when the web application proxy receives that, it takes, oh, now you have a token, let me open it. And then when it opens it, it sees a bunch of claims. One of them is the thumbprint of that certificate. So on one side, it checks, it receives that thumbprint, but also it receives the device certificate that was sent along with the request. If you say, oh, do they match? Are they the same ones? Then if they match, then of course it would allow access. Now this is the part that if somebody will steal that token, then the web application proxy won't allow access to. So when that happens, it basically will just replay that request to the backend. If the URL is a different URL, then it will send it there. And then the application, given that it's a Windows integrated application, you know, relies on Kerberos tokens or something like or NTLM, it will say, I don't have a token, you are not authenticated. So it will send a 401 unauthorized saying that it requires negotiate. Now, the web application proxy, if you remember, we specified that SPN when we published that application in my first demo. It will use that SPN. It will use another claim that is the UPN claim that is also part of the token, and it will do Kerberos constraint delegation against AD on behalf of that user. When AD authenticates successfully that user and knows that the web application proxy is trusted for delegation, then it will just send a Kerberos ticket that it will, that the proxy will encapsulate in an apreg message in the authorization header of that request, send it over to the application, and then the application will be happy and return the content. Now, when it returns the content, you will see that it also returns probably a cookie for that session SSO, or that basically that session, and then the content and the cookie are sent along by the proxy. But if you see, there's something else here, and that is the proxy cookie. So basically what the proxy does is allows access to the application, and in the legback, it will insert another cookie that it would say, oh, now you are authenticated to the edge. So next time that a new request is coming, that now the the proxy won't redirect to the ADFS for a token, but it will take that cookie, it will verify, authorize it, and then it will allow access. So this is the happy ending. The user has its content, and then we have three cookies. One of them is a persistent cookie, given that the device is a workplace join device. So then let's move on to user access and see how all this, what we've done in the demos, and explain how that, you know, what's the implication for the user. So now let's say that the device, you know, the user went home, then the next day, the time passed, or probably the user shut down the device, turn it on again. So the only cookie that will be remaining is the persistent one, again, because it's a workplace join device. The other two cookies probably have expired already. So now the user wants to access a different application. So now let's go to a demo. Let's see it working, and then we explain what we did. So we are here in my client, and then I'm going to Internet Explorer, and I'm going to access a different application, let's say a claims aware application. And so let me explain this. So we are going to access for the first time. We have just registered the device. We're required to access once to get that SSO cookie. And then when that happens, again, it will ask me to authenticate using MFA. I receive the call. And then I authenticate. Okay. So now I am there, you know, just a very simple application. Now, if I close that, and for example, I just come to, so I just close the browser. So in this case, all session cookies would have gone. And then I'm going to the application again. I will just go and have access. And the reason was that now I'm presenting that cookie to the web application proxy, and that allows me to have access. You know, a pretty simple demo, but pretty powerful for users that don't need to specify over and over, or they don't need to have their cell phones every time that they need to authenticate or have access. So to explain the user access and the SSO, let me introduce another new concept, which is how the rich application pattern, you know, let's say OAuth, for example, applications that are accessing services in the backend, how the web application proxy manages that pre-authentication and how SSO works there. So there are two things. One is, as I mentioned briefly, the rich application has this web authentication broker at hand to handle authentication against the ADFS. This is basically just an API call, a web authentication broker that, you know, authenticate, and then there are some parameters that it passed. The difference with the passive flow that we have described initially, in which it's a browser that accesses the application redirects to the ADFS, ADFS redirects to the application, is not applicable anymore here. The rich application will know beforehand what's the ADFS, what's the identity provider that will give them that will give it that token. So in this case, the device, the application, will go directly to the ADFS, and it will say, okay, give me a token for a specific application. Let's say that my application is LOB/mobile, and instead of being Windows Authentication, I think I made a mistake there, but it's let's say that it's an OAuth client. It's OAuth-based. It's a modern application. It's a modern endpoint that shares the same authentication policies defined in ADFS. So that that now I'm requesting a token for that endpoint. But also, if you see, now I'm sending also that SSO cookie, that cookie that was provisioned before, which means that now ADFS, instead of saying, oh, just give me authentication credentials, what it will do is it crack open that cookie. It will say, what are the authentication methods that were used before to get that cookie? And it will compare those with the current policy. So basically, the cookie will say, you know, this cookie was obtained when the user specified username and password, and when user specified additional authentication. Will that meet the current policies defined in ADFS? Yes. If yes, then basically the ADFS will just send a token. It won't send any credentials request, any page, or anything like that. Now, I'm calling this token a combo token. And the reason is because when ADFS issued that token, it knew that the client was outside, that the application was inside, so then it required pre-authentication. So we'll see in a second what that combo token has. When the web authentication broker receives that, then it forwards that to the application, and the application will just send that token to the backend service. In the authorization header, you know, a pretty common pattern for modern applications. So the proxy will receive that token, will crack it open, and then we'll see two things. The proxy token, which is that edge token, that same token that we were referring to in the previous slides, but also the app token. So what happened was that ADFS knew that pre-authentication was required, and it actually created two tokens and encapsulated those in a combined token. In here, we call the combo token. So what the proxy would do is take that proxy token, it would authorize it, and if everything is fine, it will just replay that request to the service in the backend with just the application token. The service will get the application token, and it will be just happy, and it will send the payload to the device. So if you see, this is a very powerful functionality of the proxy along with ADFS. ADFS will know exactly when pre-authentication is required, and will act accordingly. It will check combined policies for both the application and the edge, and it will even issue a combined token in which includes the application token and the edge token. And if you see in this example, the user didn't provide credentials or authenticated in any way beyond the cookie that was presented out. Any questions so far before I move into the next next section? Okay, I will give some time at the end as well for that. So now let me jump into VPN and what the enhancements that we've made in Windows Server 2012 R2 are. So first of all, I want to say that we are very excited that we have been working with partners like the ones that you see, F5, Juniper, Checkpoint, Dell, and SonicWall, in which they have already committed to provide VPN clients that work with our VPN server solutions. And well, what did we do? So basically, the old VPN solution that was kernel based and that was basically very tied to the that it would basically provide any resiliency, that it would not provide resiliency to the entire OS, that is gone. Now our VPN is user-based, and as such, it will enjoy of all the user level applications. It will have, for that, of course, we have also provided PowerShell support for managing those VPNs and VPN properties, and then also we have created UI that is integrated with the OS, and I will show you that in a minute in a demo. So now the other very interesting point that we have added and that highlights this enable work from anywhere and in the BYOD scenario is the app trigger VPN. And what that means is that when you are in your, let's say, in your Surface tablet outside of the corporate network, and you are going to a specific internal site that is only on-premises accessible, the VPN will know that belongs to a specific suffix that is belongs to the on-premises namespace, and it will trigger the VPN connection, allowing access automatically. So that's one key point that I wanted to highlight on the client side, the app trigger VPN. On the server side, we also have added extensions for third-party plugins. So for example, you can have phone factor authenticating as part of the VPN connection establishment and to reach further levels of security. So with that in mind, let me show you a quick demo on the VPN trigger capabilities. So in this case, just to show you, this is my machine. It's non-domain joined. It's just my tablet. It doesn't have any domain suffix. And then we have just the external, in this case, is the events Wi-Fi. So if I just go to Internet Explorer, it's a very simple call. And then I'm going to access MSW. Now, what I'm doing here is using a real environment that we have used in MSIT on our real environment in Microsoft. So when I do this, then okay, I receive the call and hang on. Okay, so in this case, it has triggered the connection automatically, but then I just hung on that. Sorry about that. Actually, I will need to do that again. But okay, so the key point is that that I went to MSW, and then at that point, it would know that MSW is part of the internal network, and it would trigger a specific connection. Now I'm receiving the call. So now I'm connected to my VPN by just calling into the specific MSW. If I do, given that I took some time to answer my call, it timed out and it didn't have access. But now if I refresh, I would have access to that application. So actually I won't, okay, there you go. So there we are. Okay, so that was just a simple demo that showed the capabilities both on the client and on the server. When I went to Internet Explorer and went to a specific internal resource, the VPN client knew that that was an internal resource. It triggered VPN connection. And then on the server, we connected through Phone Factor as a third-party plugin as well, as an extensibility point on the authentication part of the VPN server. So what we did basically was just this. I went in my Internet Explorer, I typed a specific address. In this case, let's say that it's an internalfabricam.com. The VPN trigger would have configured a specific DNS suffixes that it will allow them to identify if it is a corporate domain name or not. And then it would have a VPN interface that in this particular example is native to Windows. And here's where we can have other partners implementing that as well. It came to the VPN gateway, our VPN server. And then we had, you know, a radio server backed by EAD that had a third party, that had an extensibility point for third parties. In this case, we used Active Directory Authentication. Active Authentication, or well known as phone factor, the user received a call, it authenticated, and then it went back again authenticating to that portal. Okay, so I want to open for questions at this point. There are four mics, two mics here, two mics there. So if you want to get closer to a mic, that would be great. In the meantime, there is this related content that you might want to refer after the session. That will give you a better idea of the overall end-to-end enabled work from anywhere. So, okay, let's...
Jaro, just want to clarify. Phone Factor is Windows Azure Active Authentication. It's running up in the cloud, not on-prem.
There you go. Windows Azure Active Authentication is the name of the service that we used. Okay, please.
Do you have granularity of subdirectories on web applications? Can you break out separate subdirectories as separate applications?
Certainly you can. So if you have different paths under the same namespace, you can create different applications. Yes, sir.
Can you deploy the direct access and the application gateway on the same device? You mentioned they're both integrated in the remote access service.
Yeah, certainly you can. Yes.
With the proxy, since it has ADFS, proxy with it as well, can that replace my existing ADFS proxy? Will that service other third-party claims apps that we may have? Can I add my Reliant trusts from my existing party? Could I migrate those to the access gateway since it's running the ADFS proxy anyway and get rid of the other one?
Okay, so this will replace your existing ADFS proxies. Okay. It will be just embedded on the web application proxy. Yes. Please.
Can you set a log-off time for single sign-on or a manual log-off?
Well, yes. You can control, time to leave of those cookies. However, the workplace joined cookie is a persistent one, and by that means that you are trusting that device for that access. You can revoke that access at any time, but that is a persistent one.
So if we're trusting that device, can we enforce a password and a lockout time?
Yes. For untrusted ones, yes.
On that device?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So just to add on to that, workplace join is interesting.
So workplace join is fundamentally about access governance. It can be augmented with device management capabilities to control as much as you need on the client. So.
Okay.
Who else? Yes, please.
Is there any requirements for the internal service published or?
Actually, it is not. If you have an IWA application, the only thing that you need to do is create that in ADFS as a relying party and then publish that application. That's it. Here.
Hi. Can the application proxy support client certificates for the multi-factor authentication?
Okay, so that's a good question, and it's a good segue to say that today we do not support certificate-based authentication on the web application proxy. That's something that we are looking forward on that. And then one thing that I want to say is that there are some patterns like, for example, HTTP basic. Like if you have an application that is HTTP basic, There's no pre-authentication support on the web application proxy. However, you can achieve that access through the pass-through option that I showed you when publishing apps.
So just to add on to that, there are two types of use cases. One is the application itself is directly integrated with certificate authentication, and the other is the application is just a Windows integrated authentication. Now, in the case of Windows integrated authentication, since we're externalizing all authentication to ADFS, and that supports inbox certificate authentication that is linked to AD accounts. So you can always do that. However, if the channel between the web application proxy and the application requires the certificate authentication, as Jairo mentioned, that is not supported by the web application proxy in this way.
So first of all, watch your mics up in the back, just so, because I was standing back there for a while.
Sorry,
and there's other people back there. Anyway, so
thank you.
You mentioned that your LOB, can it be an Azure or O365 environment?
Okay, in the case, like if you have your application in the cloud.
No, my LOB, so you said your LOB it was some fictional app, right?
Yes.
I want it to be Azure, or I want it to be O365.
Yeah, well, if your application is in the cloud, you already have access, direct line of sight to that application. Now, is your question, how can I control the access to that application? You can still do it through ADFS. So basically, if you have your application in the cloud, that application would have a representation in your ADFS, and you can control the policies the same way as we described.
So particularly my question, though, is currently Azure and O365 supports that scenario?
Okay, so the scenario that we have just discussed is mainly focusing on premises resources that are published. Now, that doesn't mean that the whole end-to-end workplace work from anywhere is not supported. Certainly it is, because now the device have access, direct access to the application. The application will do the authentication against your ADFS if you are a managed, if you have your ADFS deployed. And then all the policies of ADFS will be applicable to that the same way. So it's exactly the same. It will work the same way. Now, the web application proxy is the component that allows those hidden applications on the backend to be exposed to the internet. That's the difference. I don't know if I answered your question. Probably not.
Really.
Maybe you can stop by after the questions. In the back, please.
Yep. Is Windows 7 endpoints available to authenticate to the web application proxy?
Can you elaborate that on a little bit?
Windows 7, is there going to be any, will it only be available for Windows 8 endpoints, or will Windows 7 endpoints be available?
Okay, so the web application proxy will certain. You're talking about the Windows 7 client?
Yes.
Yes, certainly. So actually, Windows 7 and even all the browser-based access on applications on the backend, you can do on any device that supports browser and supports cookies. Basically, if you have even your Android or your iPad or Windows 7, you can have access to those applications, certainly, yes.
So, Jairo, just to add, that's a great question. Now, if you look at the web application proxy, there's nothing Windows related to that. It is available to any device, including iPads and Androids and all of that. The workplace joint feature that we have, which allows you to do additional risk management by saying user plus device, now that's currently available only in Windows 8.1 plus the iOS. We do plan to make it available on Windows 7 and also other devices in the future.
Yes. Yeah, thanks, Renee. That's a great clarification. Please.
Why did you use the VPN instead of the web application proxy in your last demo on the MS, whatever that website was?
Oh, because that demo was particular to the VPN. If you remember in my first slide when I showed the three different solutions, I was just highlighting the particular VPN. So is your question why that VPN was not the same web application proxy box?
Was that just an example?
Just an example, yeah.
Oh, okay. So some other rich line of business application would have actually done the same thing if it behind the scenes it had tried to go to a URL.
Totally,
instead of just a web application.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Okay. Exactly. Actually, that's a great point. Now, there are two that I didn't mention. There are two triggers in the VPN client. One is based on the name. So every time you do a request under a specific suffix or something, that will trigger the VPN. But then also we have the app trigger VPN, and that's mainly focused on modern applications. So if you know in Windows, every application has a specific ID. So you can say, if I'm going to launch my MSX, you know, like expense reports application, then trigger VPN. So it's based on the application, not on the name. But we have the two options.
Please. So one of the things that I noticed in your client environment, you assume it's clean. Is there anything you need to do to make sure it's clean before you go through that exercise?
No. I mean,
so it could be a fully infected system and the scenario will work?
Sure, yes. Because now, if you are just enabling this access through the web app proxy, yes. I mean, you just need access, and if you have that certificate, that will work.
So now, if I have a keylogger on there, I'm perfectly okay.
What's that again?
If I have a keylogger on there, I'm perfectly okay.
Well, I think the main point here is, you know, one of the things I mentioned in my talk yesterday was there are two value props. You know, if you look at this, you have to look at the end-to-end value prop. If you just look at the web application proxy and say, can it allow me to go and do these things? The answer is yes. But in reality, our guidance to customers is this allows you to do all the access connectivity and access governance aspects. Mm-hmm. You do need an MDM to complement the strategy because ultimately, we don't want to add all of the MDM. There are so many MDM offerings out there. We don't want to go and add all of the MDM offerings as well. So you really need to complement this with your MDM offering, which will go and do all of the device inspection and see whether...
So you want to definitely say then the device needs to be clean before you go through this effort.
Exactly.
Okay.
The device needs to be clean, and how you get the device clean, there are multiple offerings, including Intune and other MDM vendors that are out there that will help you do that. This allows the user productivity. Once that device is clean, this allows you to enable the user to be more productive. I just wanted to add one more aspect to the last question that was asked. Why did Hiro show MSW with VPN? Now, the reality is a lot of people are going to use VPN for many reasons. The web application proxy is very much focused on web applications. If you have other applications, you will need a VPN. So you need to figure out what is the right strategy for your organizations. And many companies have VPNs for some usage and the web application proxy for some of the usages. The other thing you also need to consider is the web application proxy that's out there right now. You know, while we go and allow you to publish web applications and all of that, there are going to be cases where your web apps may have a lot of URLs that are short form URLs, which we may not be able to convert all of them depending on how the web application is built with the JavaScripts that try to form these URLs. In which case, if you have not published the internal and the external URLs, for example, in this case, it was HTTP MSW, it's a short form. If your web application has a lot of URLs in the body that requires translation, the web application proxy will not be able to handle those type of things. In which case, our guidance is to make sure that you're using the same URL inside and outside. It's a fully formed name so that the users have one single endpoint that they're going to, which is a fully qualified name. Or you may also have to go and consider VPN for those types of scenarios.
So there's no URL rewrite like there was in TMG and UAG?
There is URL rewriting, but it's only in the headers. It's not in the body. And I can give you more details about what that means. Yeah. And if you have needs for that, we would love to hear your feedback so we can figure out whether this type of rewriting in the body is also useful. Because one of the things we have found is that especially when JavaScript, you know, if there's a forming of URLs using JavaScript on the client, there's really not much we can do. So it's very hard to go and provide that full fidelity with URLs, especially when you're using short URLs. So our guidance is to use fully formed names. But if you have requirements for body, come and speak to me, and then we'll figure out what are your needs so they can start adding those types of features in the future.
Mark. When the VPN is triggered by an application, does the at what point does the VPN become disconnected, or is that a manual step once the VPN is established?
Well, so basically, if you configure those triggers, it will always be listening on requests that meet that specific criteria. Now, you can certainly. I'll show you. Basically, there's a checkbox on the configuration of the connection that you can say disable the trigger. So if say for example, if you are connected and you do disconnect, that checkbox will be cleared out. So until you check back again, then you are saying to the OS, take control again of the VPN trigger. Is that?
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is if the application goes, triggers the VPN, connects, does what it needs, does that VPN then drop on its own?
Yeah, I can answer that. So when you start the application, the VPN triggers, and when you close the application, now as you know, the VPN connection creates an interface, right? So when you close the app, there is no activity on that interface anymore. So we just give it some time to make sure that the application is indeed down. And then after that timeout or whatever you want to call it, we disconnect the connection automatically. So during that time, if another application comes up and latches on to that VPN interface, this interface still stays up.
But if the application were to stay open, it would keep the VPN up?
Yeah, it'll keep the VPN. I'm also assuming that, you know, there is traffic going through the connection when the app is up. Because if the app is up and there is no traffic at all, then again that timeout will come in and the VPN will get disconnected.
What if you have other corporate traffic for some
yeah,
other
then
app?
Then it'll stay up.
It's going to stay up.
Yeah. So as long as there's connection, as long as there is traffic going through that VPN connection, it'll stay up.
We have 50 more seconds. Otherwise, Anand, who is FPM for VPN, and myself, and Uday, and Sam, and Adam will be here to get any other questions. Okay, in the back end.
Is there any option for direct access instead of VPN? Like when you use an application, instead of doing VPN, can we do direct access?
Well, as you know, direct access is all anyway giving you an always-on experience, right? So it is not tied to any application.
Okay.
So if you log in with your smart card, the moment you log in, your direct access connection comes up, and then after that, you can just use all your corporate resources as if you were sitting inside your work network.
Mm-hmm. So we can use actually direct access as well as VPN, like because at some places they block VPN ports in hotels and also. At that places, yeah. We can use direct access?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm assuming that, you know, both the direct access and VPN that you're referring to are being used to connect to the same end network,
right.
To the same company. So in that case, yeah, if your direct access is up, you would not need VPN at all. And direct access has different types of tunnels. So there are tunnels which can go through firewalls, which are SSL-based, right? So you would never run into a problem where direct access doesn't come up, even in a hotel. So you should always be able to use it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much, and I will be here then.